belongs to Solomon, written by Solomon. And you know, we know from the account of the Kings that Solomon wrote 1,005 psalms, right? That's incredible. 1,005 psalms. But this here, of all the 1,005, we have what verse 1 says, the Song of Songs. We got the best one. We may only have one of the 1,005, but we have the best one before us. We have the Song of All Songs. This is the grandest theme in terms of the exercising of wisdom for man and woman on planet Earth. And so this Song of Songs, a song of love, is what we're dealing with here. Before we get into this, you're going to see, as most Bibles have, you're going to see subheadings, subheadings, throughout these chapters that will distinguish who is talking in the song. Now, those are going to be wrong for the most part. And what's interesting is, you know, we can't trust in these kinds of things, because you might be reading from a New King James, someone reading from, you know, somewhere else, something else, ESV or what have you. This is what's fascinating, is if you trust in these subheadings that, oh, the Shulamite's speaking, and the daughters of Jerusalem are speaking, and then the Beloved is speaking. But then you go from reading a New King James to a different translation, and they have different subheadings. What does that tell us? It tells us they don't know. The publishers, they all had their own idea. These subheadings are not God's Word. Okay, it's only what's in the verses that is God's Word. Mankind does not know. And I'm not going to pretend to know. I'm going to put out my idea there of who I believe is speaking, and I believe we will be right more often than not by paying close attention to the context. But even still, there are certain times and certain statements where, I'll attribute that to so-and-so that's talking, but I don't 100% know. So I could certainly be wrong in some of this. So that's one thing that we need to be careful of. The other thing we need to be careful of is looking at who the players are here in this song. Solomon's telling a story. And what's fascinating is that Solomon is telling this story through the mind, through the eyes, and through the mouth of a young girl, right? Of a young woman. It's like, that sounds strange, but that's how he did it. This is how he did it. It's from her perspective, not Solomon's perspective. This is about what's going on in her mind and what she's thinking of, not what Solomon is thinking of. And so he has her on display as this young woman who must choose wisdom or choose folly. Interestingly enough, the idea of choosing folly in love would be her allowing herself to fall for Solomon. And the wisdom that he is showing in the book is when she chooses to turn away from Solomon. Solomon knows he's got a problem, after all. You know, Solomon had 1,000 wives. Now, at the point that this song was written, you'll see the details if you read through the whole song. You see that Solomon, at this time in his life, he only had 60 wives. I say only. 60 wives and 8 concubines he had when this Shulamite girl comes into his life. Whether she literally ever came into her, you know, whether she's a historical person or not, I don't know. Whether he is just creating this example for young men, young women, you know, even old alike as well, to learn how to exercise some wisdom in matters of love and choosing who to marry and these kinds of things. So when you look at the players, you have, of course, the Shulamite girl. She's the center of it all. We're going to get into her mind. We're going to get into her daydreams. We're also going to get into her night dreams, right? We're going to see things play out in her mind. It's going to be interesting. Now, most individuals might look at the Song of Solomon and may not have spent too much time paying much attention to it, and they think that the Song of Solomon is a love story, a song of love between the Shulamite and Solomon himself, that there's just basically two players here, and the love that they share for one another. And some have gone so far to say, look here at these two that love each other so much. This is a portrayal of Christ in the church. Well, the problem with that is when we really get into the material, to really start reading through the song, we're going to run into a lot of speed bumps and hiccups with that because it doesn't fit the puzzle, right? The puzzle pieces just don't match up, and we could try to force something like that. The very first time I looked at the Song of Solomon, I looked at it with that biasness in mind because someone had told me that it's about Solomon and this woman and the love they share together. Someone had told me that that is a portrait of Christ in the church. So I start reading it with that in mind, and then I became very, very confused because there's something wrong here. There's something going on. There is what we'd call today a triangle. There is a love triangle. We have another man in the story, and we have one woman and two men. Who will she pick? So you have actually not Solomon that is discussed the most. Solomon is talked about very little in the eight chapters. Who is referred to more often than not is a shepherd boy from the regions of Lebanon. And this is the boy that the Shulamite really has her eyes set upon. In fact, we'll see details in the text that will actually show that they are that he is her fiancé, basically, that they are in engaged to be married. And she calls him her beloved. And then there is, of course, Solomon, who is here very, very little in the book. But everything certainly is in the setting of the palace of Solomon. And Solomon shows up from time to time, and he says some inappropriate things. More often than not, when Solomon opens his mouth, it's inappropriate. Impure. It's very on the surface kind of love. It's a very worldly concept of love. Again, whether this is the way that Solomon was or whether he is using himself in the text just as a bad example, I don't know, how true or historically accurate this is. This is simply a book of wisdom, an illustration of wisdom. And then lastly, the other individuals we will see in the Song of Solomon are the female attendants or the maidservants that are in Solomon's palace, and they are attending to the Shulamite girl. Now, what makes the Song of Solomon confusing is that when it begins, it doesn't really give us the backstory. We find the backstory piece after piece throughout the eight chapters. And finally we can put it all together and realize what happened. So as we're going to start here in chapter 1, what is important for me is just to say for just a second a little bit of the backstory, which we're going to find scattered out throughout the book. The backstory is that this Shulamite girl is from the regions of Lebanon. And she has she's engaged, essentially, to this shepherd boy in Lebanon as well. And they love each other. But Solomon is coming through the regions of Lebanon, which he does from time to time. We see that in the biblical record as well. Solomon is coming through in his parade, in his glory, in his majesty and riches, and everything that is just King Solomon. You know, one of the richest guys that has ever walked planet Earth. And here he comes, and he sees this girl, and this girl sees him, and he invites her. And she makes the decision to come. And Solomon takes her back to Jerusalem. Solomon takes her back to the chambers of his palace. And she has these female attendants that are constantly surrounding her day and night. Day and night they are surrounding her. And so that's really where now the song will begin. Is her considerations and all of her thoughts and all of her dreaming that she does throughout the book. So this is the Song of Songs that is Solomon's. And in verse 2, the Shulamite is the first to speak. And she says, "Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. Because of the fragrance of your good ointments, your name is ointment poured forth. Therefore, the virgins love you. Draw me away." And so as the Shulamite speaks, we're thinking, well, I don't know who she's talking to. I believe after reading through the whole book, here she is talking about and thinking about the one that she has left from back home. This shepherd boy. And she is calling him, she talks about his good name here in this text, that his name is you know, like sweet, you know, ointment poured forth and these kinds of things. She's referring to his character, and she's wanting him back, and she says, "Draw me away." And the main reason why I think that she's talking to the shepherd boy and not to Solomon is because especially her saying, "Draw me away." And the response of the maidservants that are surrounding her as they interject, she says, "Draw me away." What do they say? "We will run after you." Now, that tells us something right there. That she's got an idea in her head that is against what the attendants at Solomon's palace, what they are, you know, working towards with her, and the task that they have been given is to ready her for King Solomon, to be either one of his concubines or to be his bride, you know, bride number 61. And so there they are prepping her for this purpose and attending to this very need and purpose. And she is talking about someone else. And she is saying to that individual, "Draw me away." Their response here is, "We will run after you." You're not to be drawn away from this. What you have here is perfect. And Solomon is the greatest. And so she's going to have this back and forth with the maidservants throughout the chapters until they finally get this idea much later on in the chapters where they're like, "Okay, wait a second. We've heard a lot about this boy back home. And we're kind of liking him too now." You know, but at first, they're not too happy about this. So now verse 4 is a tough verse, right? Because there's so many people that talk in verse 4. It'd be difficult to get a handle on. But what happens next is after they say to her, "We'll run after you. You know, we're going to get you back here. You know, you don't need to be drawn away by some other man when you have Solomon." Now the Shulamite speaks. And she says, and here is a scene-setting moment for us. She says, "The king has brought me into his chambers." So we know where we're at. We're in Solomon's palace. We're in the chambers of Solomon. And the Shulamite is there. She's far from home. And as she says that, you notice that the maidservants around her, the attendants, they respond by saying, "We will be glad and rejoice in you. We will remember your love more than wine." You know, and so they're encouraging this, right? That's their task. That's their purpose of existing, is to encourage this. And so they're rejoicing that she's there with Solomon there in the palace. The Shulamite's response is simply referring to Solomon, saying, "Rightly do they love you." Right? So the attendants are all excited about this. And she says about this, "Rightly do they love you." You know, this is fitting. Solomon, I mean, you know, she made a rash decision. She's with Solomon, right? She was taken by him. Everyone's taken by Solomon, right? Just the power, the majesty, the glory, the riches, the everything that is King Solomon. You got to be something if you're going to have 1,000 wives, and this is Solomon. So, you know, rightly do they love you? They're all excited about this, she says. They love you. But in verse 5, she says, "I'm out of place. I'm out of place here." And you notice the insecurities of this young woman coming out. And verse 5, she says, "I am dark but lovely. A daughter, O daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, like the curtains of Solomon. Do not look upon me because I am dark, because the sun has tanned me. My mother's sons were angry with me. They made me the keeper of the vineyards, but my own vineyard I have not kept. Tell me, O you whom I love, where you feed your flock, where you make it rest at noon. For why should I be as one who veils herself by the flocks of your companions?" So she begins here by bringing up one of her insecurities in this, the darkness of her skin. She's in the midst of a palace of people that are much more pale, right? These are people that don't allow the skin to touch them, or the sun to touch their skin, rather. What does she say? She says that she's had a rough past, that the sons, right, her brothers were angry with her, and they threw her to the vineyard. And so there she is day and night in the vineyards working. And so the sun has made her extremely dark. And here she is amongst those who are much more pale, and so she's bringing up these concepts, and so here she is, and she points it out at the end of verse 6 that she was the keeper of the vineyards. She says, "But my own vineyard I have not kept." Right? She's referring to a lack of wisdom in her own life, that she's done a lot of good work in keeping the vineyards of their family, but herself, she's not worked on. You know. And in verse 7, she says, "Tell me, O you whom I love." Now, there's a good indication to us that she's not talking to Solomon here. He says, "Where do you feed your flock? You know, where do you make it rest at noon? For why should I be as one who veils myself?" Well, what she's pointing out here is she's not talking about Solomon. Solomon is not a shepherd. You know, this individual she's talking about is feeding the flock. She wants to know where he's at. Where are you? Because, you know, she doesn't want to be one who has to veil herself. You know, she's probably in the midst of a whole lot of women there in Solomon's palace that veil themselves. And there's a lot of things she's not liking about this situation. And she's very out of place among these women. She's out of place in terms of the tanness of her skin. You know, she's out of place in terms of how they veil themselves, you know, from on a more figurative level, you know, but also a literal level too, I imagine. But she doesn't want this. She's not liking this. And so she's asking, where's the one that she loves? Where's the one that she loves? Well, this is when the attendants get kind of upset with her again. Remember last time she said, I want to go away. And they said, well, no, we're going to run after you and bring you back. Well, now here she's talking about, oh, where are you? You know, my love, where are you? Where are you? You know, you feeding your flock? And verse 8, they said, if you do not know, O fairest among women, follow in the footsteps of the flock and feed your little goats beside the shepherd's tent. So their response here is, If you don't know where he is, then go out there and start following a bunch of animals around. You know, so again, there's going to be this back and forth. The attendants don't agree with her. She doesn't agree with them. This is how the situation's going to be. In verse 9, finally Solomon shows up. And there's a feast prepared. You'll see all this, but in verse 9, Solomon says, I have compared you, my love, to my filly among Pharaoh's chariots. Your cheeks are lovely with ornaments, your neck with chains of gold. We will make you ornaments of gold with studs of silver. So Solomon here, he approaches and he says, you know, I compare you, my love. Now, that doesn't mean that he's her love, all right? But I've compared you, my love. You know, Solomon's, he's really loose with that word. But he's loose with a lot of things. And he said, you're like my filly. You're like my filly among Pharaoh's chariots. You know, Pharaoh, he only occupied stallions. He only occupied uncastrated male horses in his military. So what Solomon's talking about is a military trick that Solomon uses against Pharaoh, and that is to let a filly, a mare, run out there wild in the midst of the male militia, right, of the horses, the stallions. And it's a distraction, right? Solomon, I guess he thinks, you know, this will work, but, you know, he says, you know, you're a distraction. You're a distraction to me. You know, your beauty is distracting me like a military tactic, you know. Well, he goes on, you know, he starts to describe, you know, some things about her. You know, Solomon, he's so on the surface. He's very physical, you know. It's an important thing to note in the scriptures is, and with young folks, you know, we need to look deeper than skin deep, right? Because beauty, after all, is only skin deep unless the heart's beautiful. But if the heart is ugly and beauty is skin deep, then we have a tremendous problem on our hands. So, you know, he's talking about her beauty, and then, you know, he says, well, you know, we'll make you, in verse 11, you know, jewelry. You know, she's already got all kinds of jewelry on, you know, she's decked out, but we'll make you your own personal jewelry. So we see what Solomon's after. You see the kind of person he's playing in this song. Well, the Shulamite girl begins to come into these daydreams that she does all throughout the books or the chapters. In verse 12, she says, while the king is at his table, so there she is at the feast, she says, my spikenard sends forth his fragrance. So this fragrance, this spikenard, very expensive, this smell comes up to her nostrils, and, you know, it causes her to just kind of drift away. You know, she does a lot of dreaming, you know, and she's a young girl after all, but she does a lot of these kinds of things. And so here she is. She's supposed to be focusing on Solomon. She smells this spikenard. She's kind of taken away, And so she says in verse 13, that a bundle of myrrh is my beloved to me. It lies all night between my breasts. My beloved is to me a cluster of henna blooms in the vineyards of En-Gedi. Behold, you are fair, my love. Behold, you are fair. You have dove's eyes. This seems to be something that maybe her beloved has said to her at one point, or she's saying it to him. In verse 16, she continues saying, behold, you are handsome, my beloved. Yes, pleasant. Also, our bed is green. The beams of our houses are cedar and our rafters of fir. Here she's talking about their future together, right? Now, this isn't Solomon's future. You know, we know what Solomon's house was built out of. It was built of cedar, but it wasn't built with fir rafters. So what she's referring to is not Solomon's house. She's not talking about Solomon. She's not very interested in that. But she's talking to this handsome beloved that she talks about, and how, you know, their bed is green. You know, it is pure. It is waiting for them back home. They have the house. They have the bed. She's made a really terrible decision. And in chapter 2 and verse 1, she says, I'm the rose of Sharon and the lily of the valleys. Like a lily among thorns, so is my love among the daughters. Now this is a text, whether it's Rose of Sharon or Lily of the Valleys, is often applied to Jesus, which is unusual because, number one, the person talking in this text is the bride, right? It is the Shulamite, not the man. So to try to compare this to Christ and the church, it is the woman that is saying that she's a Rose of Sharon and the Lily of the Valley. So even if the Shulamite is a portrayal of the church, then this would be the church as the Lily of the Valley or the Rose of Sharon, not Jesus. So that's certainly a bit of an issue. But what is she actually saying here? I'm the Rose of Sharon. Well, Sharon is a place of roses, right? That's why she brings it up. She is one in a million roses as a Rose of Sharon. Or she says, I'm the lily of the valleys, meaning she is one lily in the midst of a million lilies of the valley. See, she does not view herself with a whole lot of confidence, or that she is, prettier than anyone else, than any other girl. It's nothing like that. And so this is what she means when she says she's a rose of Sharon that's full of roses, or lily of the valley that's full of valleys. But in this, again, this daydream, what is her beloved saying back to her? As she takes a step back in her insecurities, her beloved, the shepherd boy, says to her in verse 2, again, this is in her daydream, he says, like a lily among thorns, so is my love among the daughters. What he's pointing out here is, she says, I'm a lily of the valley. He says, no, you're a lily among the thorns. See. Now, in verse 3, she says to him, you're like an apple tree among the trees of wood. You know, you among the cedars, among the fir, you are a fruitful tree, an apple tree. So is my beloved among the sons. I sat down in his shade with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. She says, continues in the dream, saying in verse 4, he brought me into the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love. Sustain me with cakes and raisins, refresh me with apples, for I am love sick. So she's recounting, clearly, as she smelled this spikenard, she's recounting this, wondrous occasion that she had in talking to her beloved shepherd boy. And, you know, his compliments to her, her compliments to him. Then she says, you know, he brought me on this date. He brought me to the banqueting house. His banner or his seal over me was love. And this is when she kind of cuts out of the dream, right? She kind of cuts out and she says, sustain me with cakes of raisins and refresh me with apples, for I am love sick. So she's got a problem. You know, this is not all fine and dandy. There's Solomon, there's her, there's love, and that's it. There's something much greater, much bigger going on here in the text. So, why? If she is sitting there at the king's table, and he's giving her all this jewelry, and he's promising her more jewelry, and she's sitting there thinking, I'm lovesick. You know, she's thinking of something else. Well, verse 6, his left hand's under my head, his right hand embraces me. So, again, in this daydreaming of hers, you know, that's how she concludes it. And then we get to what I'm going to be closing with here is verse 7. Such a critical text here is verse 7. This is a song after all. So verse 7 would be the chorus. So what we have just gone through is like if we were in the songbook, verse 1, right? The first stanza is what we had just looked at. And now we're getting to the chorus. The chorus is a repeat. It's something that's going to be repeated in the book. And this is so important as we get to the core of the matter. And the chorus of the Song of Songs is really that message of what the song is all about. That exercising of wisdom and the exercising of patience, you know, in particular with the young folks, of course, but, you know, with everybody as well. There's going to be a lot in this song that even those who are married can take with them. There's going to be some things that will happen as to how to deal with problems in a relationship, whether married relationship or before marriage in those relationships, how to help take care of those kinds of problems. So there's a lot of wisdom in this book that can apply to so many people. But notice the chorus of the Song of Songs. I charge you, she says, O daughters of Jerusalem. So now she's zapped completely out of this daydream, and she says to these maidservants around her, she said, I want to charge you with something. She says, and I'm charging you by the gazelles or by the does of the field. Do not stir up nor awaken love until it pleases. Patience, wise thinking, and cautiousness is what she is charging them with. Notice, I charge you by the gazelles. I charge you by the does of the field. What do these animals have to do with anything? Well, they have to do with the fact that they're very cautious animals. They're very concerned with their life, with their continuing to exist for the next minute. And so they're watchful. They're cautious. They keep their ears open at all times. They keep their eyes wide open at all times. They're looking, they're thinking, they're silent. They're patient. This is what she's saying. This is my command, right? The Shulamite's command is the chorus. Just like these animals, this is what we, daughters of Jerusalem, need to be like. We need to exercise patience. We need to open our ears, open our eyes. We need to take the rose-colored glasses off. You know, we need to take all the jewelry off and all these things that have been given to us. You know, we've got to strip down, you know, away all this majesty and all this glory. And we need to exercise some caution because our life is at stake. Just like the gazelles and the does of the field who know that every minute their lives are at stake. And so they watch, they look, they listen. They're cautious. So that's all I have for you this evening. And again, the applications are endless if we get to thinking about it, but how important in any kind of relationship, whether a relationship pursuing love or otherwise, just in a neighborly relationship, you know, is it for us as Christians to walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise? That's exactly what Paul told the Ephesians in Ephesians chapter 5, to walk circumspectly. So these, you know, sobering matters of love that we find in the Song of Solomon really have a widespread application for us no matter where we are in our life. But I hope we will share these things and discuss these things with, you know, young folk, with grandchildren, great-grandchildren, whatever it may be, whatever opportunities the Lord may give us in this life. And I appreciate your attention this evening. I'd like to extend the gospel's invitation to any who have yet to respond to Jesus Christ as He has called and invited, and He has given Himself as a sacrifice for our sins. If you've yet to come to Him and you're resolved in your mind to do so tonight, then won't you come and let us know while together we stand and sing.